This is David Brunel. Today I'd like to share a story that happened when I went to Japan after the tsunami and earthquake to recover bodies. First of all, the reason I went was because I had been contacted initially by some folks who were going to look for American citizens who were missing after the tsunami hit the island of Japan, the West Coast. And I declined to go with that group and ended up buying a ticket myself and going to Japan to try to do a little bit of good. My background was kind of diverse, you know, from military to rescue to bodyguard stuff. And so I kind of knew that I could most likely survive as a self-contained unit in that place. The interesting thing about Japan was that everybody was being kicked out. The Kent rescue team from England was being removed. Most of the other teams were being removed. But long story short, I ended up getting embedded with the Mexico recovery team out of Mexico City. These guys had been pretty much everywhere and done recoveries in Indonesia. They were at 9/11 in New York. They're an amazing group of people. And I said before, I don't speak Japanese and I don't speak Spanish, but I do speak the common language of kindness and affirmation. And I tried to exhibit that and exercise that in country, even though after about a week in country, I kind of looked like a pirate that just got off a ship with my scraggly beard and 200 pounds of gear and my rescue gear, which part of it was military looking, but tried to make it look a lot softer as I was in country because I wanted to get embedded up north and actually do some good. I actually, finally, it took me about a week to get embedded with the Mexico recovery team through a third party non-government organization, an NGO. And as I made my way up north, it was snowing. It was quite beautiful in country. And I contemplated kind of what I was going to see, what was going to be like. And I kind of put it in the back of my mind. And I was driving with a really cool guy. He was an 8th degree black belt in Aikido. And he didn't speak hardly any English. And we chatted in broken English and my iPhone Japanese for the better part of 4 or 5 hours as we traveled up through the broken railroad, the cutoff railroad, through the highways that had been destroyed, past Fukushima, where the nuclear meltdowns were taking place. I actually felt like as we passed Fukushima and stopped for dinner there, of all things, that I was going to be cooked like I was in a microwave. I could feel my skin tingling. I could feel my whole body electrified by the sensation of what was going on there. I had a rad meter with me that shows radiation levels, and it was pegged out about 60 kilometers before we got to Fukushima. It was pegged out max. So I had no idea kind of what that would mean in the future, but I'm, you know, healthy, good to go. I just was stunned at how high the radiation levels actually were. You know, when I went on this mission, I thought I was actually going to go up and do some good for the families, and I did, that were missing loved ones. But the real story kind of culminates in an experience that I had while I was in Sendai. I had gotten to Sendai, which is a northern city, an ancient city, and it had been hit pretty hard, but a lot of the places were still intact. The coastline was pretty much destroyed. But we were about a mile inland, and I was outside, and I was with this non-government organization, and they were briefing me on what was going on up there. This group was specifically giving massages to the victims that survived, giving them counsel and therapy. And of course, my job was to get into the mud and to find bodies that were missing or rescue people, which I had no illusions that that might happen. Although after 6 weeks, they still found a living person after 6 weeks after the earthquake and tsunami, which I thought was incredible, and it's not uncommon. But I didn't expect that. I thought I would just be doing the other part of the mission, the recovery part. I was sitting on my gear in the front of this apartment complex in the parking lot, waiting for the Mexico group to show up. They were coming down from the north for rest and relaxation, R&R. And this Caucasian, this American boy around early 20s came out and sat down with me and looked at me and he said, Are you a Latter-day Saint? Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saint is the name of the church I belong to. And I looked at him and I said, yes. And I was stunned by this question because, I mean, again, if you looked at me, I did look like a pirate that had just escaped from a ship that had been at the in the ocean for like 3 months sailing without water. I mean, I just felt like a rag bag. And I didn't feel like I exhibited any kind of goodness. But, you know, when the power of the Holy Ghost, or the Spirit as we call it, speaks and connects two people thousands and thousands of miles away, seemingly there for reasons that are not really the reasons we are really there, i.e. I'm going to recover people, which again is one of the missions I performed, but really not maybe the reason I was actually there. As we chatted, I found out that this young man had some challenges at home and to join this organization as a volunteer to try to find himself. And I had a really candid conversation with him, which I won't share here, the details, but the essence of it was, you know, you need to go home and find yourself there. You need to square your life away and focus on the things and the principles that are true and solid and everlasting, and not look for external sources to make yourself whole. And he listened and he left. A few minutes later, this is true, another young man walks out, blonde haired, kind of a curly, raggedy hair style, mid early 20s again, returned missionary from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I find out. The other boy had not done that. He was kind of trying to figure out his life. This boy had been hurt by his girlfriend, his fiance, who had cheated on him, and so he joined this organization to find himself, to escape. We had another very candid conversation filled with what I call the velvet hammer. Lots of love, lots of affirmation, but kind of a noble, direct approach on what really counts, what really matters, and what doesn't. What's superficial? What kind of baggage do we carry that doesn't really have any value? How much of that do we carry, and how long do we take it with us? And many of us, that's years, decades perhaps. Whether it's being estranged from a loved one, a family member, a friend, or being offended by somebody in a social setting, whether it's at church or work or anywhere else, we tend to want to wear this all the time as some kind of a badge. And I didn't have that conversation with him in that way because it was too much, but I actually told him the same thing. Go home, reconcile your life, and things will get better. Well, I went up north into Ishinomaki and Onagawa for the period of just about a week, a little bit over a week, and did the hard thing. And it was a good mission, and we did a lot of good, and it was hard and tough and all that good stuff. But I actually found out as I was up there that these two boys went home within a couple days. I got a letter from the first boy several months later, and he was joining the elite group of United States Air Force Pararescue, which is a very highly trained force that recovers pilots and rescues people in combat circumstances or civilian circumstances all over the world. And that is how he turned his life and focused his life on something that was meaningful. That is a completely selfless line of work. You cannot think about you. It is not about you. Matter of fact, their training is dictated and focused around carrying your weight and one other person, at least. Because sometimes you might have to pick somebody up in combat and pull them out to safety by carrying them or dragging them or whatever means are possible. Today, as I contemplate this day, I reflect on that experience and realize that sometimes we are put in circumstances where we think we know why we're there. But in reality, I think there's a master plan. I know there's a master plan. And the master plan will connect us with people, put us in proximity to others that we can help, that we can lift, we can love, we can laugh with them. And at times we can give them velvet hammer counseling, a big heavy hammer with correct principles and solid truths that's wrapped around a soft coating. It might hurt a little bit, but it can actually save our lives in a different way. Not so much from a rescue standpoint physically, but from an emotional or maybe even a spiritual standpoint. I encourage all of us to get out there and don't look any farther than your own neighborhood or your own home first. And look at your children and your wife and your husband and your grandparents, your parents, your extended family, your children's spouses, your grandchildren, and find who needs you. And then do what you do best with your wisdom that you've gained over a period of time on earth. Share in love, and sometimes with a velvet hammer, important correct principles that can guide them to great joy, success, and happiness. Hope you have a great day. This is Jaeger out.